Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 15 with Cody Jones. Hold That Thought is sponsored by North 30th Sports Pub and Grill, broadcasting all the big games along with showcasing the best local musicians in the Bay Area. For more information, visit us at north30sportspub.com. Welcome, everyone, to episode 15, Cody Jones. In this episode, we rapped about DJing, live performances, mental health, social media, brand ambassadors, adding your own creative touch to classic songs, overcoming the typical request, where to find new mixes, and music for musicians. Shortly after this episode was recorded, I came across a blog about lyrics taking center stage inside streamlining. The name of this blog is Music Industry Blog, and it's by Mark Mulligan. Mark writes and breaks down the stats of lyrics. One of the things that Cody Jones mentioned on this podcast was that women tend to gravitate towards songs with an exceptional hook and strong lyrics. Here are some of the stats from Mark's blog that back up Cody's take. 88% of music subscribers look for lyrics. That is huge. Add your lyrics to your songs. People are looking for them. 70% of karaoke users are female. 72% want to sing along to the song. And 34% want to be able to sing with their friends. I'll add the link to the blog in the show notes so that you can take a deeper look at this. The more you learn about the music industry, the better off you're going to be at marketing, promoting, and selling and pushing your music. I also had a couple mess-ups in this episode. Well, yeah, I had a lot of mess-ups in this episode. I'm slowly getting better, but if you started counting my filler words, it'd probably be really bad. But in regards to practice time, I said 15,000 hours when I should have said 10,000. I probably said 15 because that's how long it's probably going to take me to become a better host. Hey, you got to start somewhere. Got to put my time in. This was an exceptional conversation on and off the air. I love the attitude, confidence, and passion of Cody Jones. He is always striving to get better, always willing to talk about the music industry, and he's a family man who works his ass off. Without further ado, here is episode 15 with Cody Jones. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hold That Thought. My name's John Samuel, and I'm going to be your host. Today, episode 15, I'm joined in my makeshift studio with Cody Jones. What's up, brother?
What's going on, man? It's chilling.
Not much. It has been a long time since I've been able to hang out with you and shoot the shit about the music business with you, and I'm really excited about this podcast. You have been doing some amazing things over the last year, over 300 shows. You recently started crossing over to doing both your band, your acoustic gigs, and a DJ set, which I think is phenomenal.
Well, thank you.
Let's jump right into it, man. How did you get into DJing?
I've always loved electronic music. Not always. I mean, ever since it's been around, I guess. Like we were talking about earlier, I love that old school 90s stuff. You know what I mean? I remember I had to see the Ultimate Dance Party in 1997.
That's awesome.
And it had like all the ones, like I said, LaBouche and, Ace of Base, all that stuff. But it was always like a guilty pleasure. You know what I mean? It was like candy. It was just like, I never thought of it as like a, I want to do this. You know what I mean? I want to make this music because I was never like a computer guy. And I was like, I always had, you know, just like not makeshift instruments, but I always had like one guitar, you know what I mean? And an amp. And like, I was just like really focused on like my instrument rather than like putting all that stuff together. It was like, you know, it seemed like forever away for me, like to have a computer and make, you know, electronic music. And I just was never that passionate about it. But ever since, you know, like dubstep and Skrillex and like Deadmau5, like once that started to kind of come into the mainstream and, you know, it came to me, I was just like, man, this is it. You know, this is like heavy. It was intense. It was nasty. It had like, it was rough around the edges. And like, it was, I was like, I gotta know how to do this. You know? So then I started researching and like how, you know, I mean, like from the bass, like how did he make that sound? You know, and like once I realized it was like, okay, well, everything is done inside the box, it's in the computer. I was like, all right, well, it seems like a giant mountain to climb, but I was like, I'm gonna get a computer, I'm gonna learn how to do this, you know, and that's basically what I did. I
was just like, how long of a process was that? A couple years?
God, yeah. I really based everything on Skrillex essentially. Like when I was like, what does he do? It's like I didn't know anything about any other programs, or like some people use Cubase, Pro Tools, blah blah blah. And you know, Ableton came up, and I started researching Ableton and how different people use it, and you know, it's how all these wubs and you know, these modulated like synchronized modulations in the synthesizers and stuff like that are all like how they're done. It seemed like that was the best software for me to get. So I, you know, saved up my money. I got my very first MacBook and I got Ableton in the push. And I always, me again, coming from a musician standpoint, I always thought like, okay, so you're playing this, you know what I mean? I always had like a hands-on approach to it rather than like, you know, a lot of producing is, you know, clicking on a mouse, you know, and that just, it was always like lackluster to me. I come from, okay, we write a song, we go in the studio, we get all your buddies and you play, and you know, like it's not necessarily antiquated, but somewhat old fashioned way of recording. So to do everything in the box was definitely like, was a new idea that I had, was probably the hardest thing to overcome. It's like, okay, so I can do everything without even picking up an instrument or touching a keyboard.
I love that.
It's amazing.
It's technology. And mm-hmm. and please don't understand. I don't want it to take any credit away from guys who put in the 15,000 hours to really perfect their instrument. Mm-hmm. But it is amazing that you can create such memorable music mm-hmm. off a box,
yeah.
off a laptop,
mm-hmm.
off a program. Was there any point in that process where you're like, okay, I just can't do this? Did you get to that point where
I've definitely hit some roadblocks for sure. And then sometimes it'd be funny, like you would learn something new, and from learning something new would be discouraging because you'd be like, oh, that's how you do that? Oh, God, there's this whole other mountain that I didn't even know was there. Like, oh man, okay. That's going to take another 6 months.
Similar to my first podcast when someone goes, you should try editing that. I was like, what? Wait, I just can't record and put it up.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, an intro and an outro?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like breaks? Commercials?
Yeah.
Really?
Do you sell advertising on the podcast yet?
No, I think I have 4 followers.
Okay.
I think,
All right.
I think once I build up a little bit and get the maybe establish a fan base, it has been the biggest blessing in disguise because I get to carry on conversations with people that normally I either don't get to see because our schedules conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Or they don't have the time, or I don't have the time to spend an hour on the phone.
Yeah.
And I have learned so much. This is episode 15. And in 15 episodes, I have learned almost as much information about the music business over the last 8 years that I have in 1 year.
Bizarre.
Like, the insight, like, if you ever want to, whatever profession you're trying to learn, if you ever want to go, how do I set my game up? Swallow your pride. Get used to what your voice sounds like.
Yep.
Start a podcast and ask people questions. You will learn so much. I usually take 2 or 3 edits on each podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I go back through and I'm like, oh, shit. Okay.
Pretty cool, right?
Yeah. That's cool. I didn't pick that up right away because you're trying to keep the flow.
Keep the thing going.
Keep the flow of the podcast. So now, the beach, did that help kick drive the DJs, the DJing?
The beach? Like, just the fact that we
just being on the beach so much.
No. Actually, I would say that it really didn't have really anything to do with it. I played down at Shepherd's all the time. And I would see, once I, you know, figured out how much these dudes were making, you know, I mean, like, I was just like, I was kind of floored. I mean, I knew they were making good money, but I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, but that was kind of after I'd already kind of planned on getting this going. Cause I wanted to use, I love the idea of being like in total control. I'm a little bit of a, you know what I mean? Like, admittedly, like, not that I don't like playing with other musicians. In fact, I really do. And I've been blessed to be able to play with some insanely, this Bay Area has some fire players, man. Like,
I just had a conversation this morning with a, when I had a cup of coffee with a guy named Joshua Riley, and he's a singer songwriter, amazing. He plays all over town, great musician. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about the same thing. The Bay Area is filled with phenomenal players.
Well, there's places to play. There's places that pay. Yeah. You know what I mean? So there's an incentive to be not only good, but do it as a profession, do it all the time. So there's less guys, you know, getting off of work and then going to the gig for Friday night, you know what I mean? Like, to do their thing, for something to do. And more guys that are like, no, this is my business. This is my job. This is what I do. I play bass for a living. You know what I mean? Like, that's not everywhere. I mean, this is a very, you know, special place to be able to do that.
That's a great place. There's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
When Chili's does music on a Friday night, you know you have an opportunity to do anything you want.
Yeah.
And you could start off at that level and you could progress to where you're at or wherever you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Really, in this state, the sky's the limit. There's an abundance of work.
Yeah.
From festivals to corporate to local gigs to... Mm-hmm. Original coffee shops, yeah. Everything. That is really cool. What has been the biggest learning experience of doing both? Because I feel that every artist should do something similar to what you're doing. Maybe not DJing's not for them.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm talking about is stepping outside their comfort zone. Not just playing your typical show. Maybe trying to do something. We got an artist in Orlando and he recently called me. He said, I'm taking acting lessons this year.
Great.
And I was like, man, that's awesome. I said, because the two coincide together.
It's just media, man. Like, the bottom line is it's just media. Any way that you can figure out how to create that, whether it's video editing, do podcasting, any kind of creative way that, like, you know, that, it's like, oh yeah, like, necessarily it's always the same thing. Well, you can't make any money doing that. Now, like, anybody will tell you can't make money just playing guitar or, like, you know, you're a starving musician, that whole thing. But, like, it's not about, like, the thing. It's about how you do it. And that's where the expression comes in. If you can get your expression out and it means something and it hits a chord of, or strikes a whatever, and you have, but you also have the business mind to be able to market that and see it through to its true potential, you can make money doing anything you want, you know? And as long as you have that, you know, I don't know, people used to call it left brain, right brain, whatever, like the creative and then the mathematical side. If you can have, like, you don't have to be so talented that like you just you blow everybody out of the water, and you don't have to be so, you know, genius and calculated that you can, you know, you're like a stockbroker with, you know, just like totally cold, you know, no emotion,
no emotion, no, you know, passion. I mean? Like,
if you can have a little bit of both somewhere in the middle, you know, that's where like amazing things get done, where you have this awesome creative new. It's not you know, revolutionary necessarily, but it's new and it's fresh and it's a new flavor. And then you have like the right marketing and the feel for your demographic and all the logistical stuff. If you can put those two things together, you know, that's when, you know, you see people like doing their own thing. And it's when they say it's like organic, like these organic businesses, like it just kind of grows. It just comes up from the ground. It comes up from nowhere. It wasn't plucked. You know, you weren't quote unquote put on by a record label. You know what I mean? You didn't get your, you know, like that. I have a buddy of mine that's always talking about, dude, when are you going to get put on? When are you going to get put on? You got to get, you know, do this and you'll get put on.
But this day and age, what does that mean?
What does it mean? It means,
I mean, you sign with a giant record label, but you can do the same thing without a giant record label. Yeah. You really can.
And I think it's just as hard. But I think it's just as hard to get noticed because, I mean, you still have to have followers and plays and clicks and views and traffic to your website and all that stuff. You still have to have that for some label to go, all right, this guy's good enough. Let's dump, you know, $100,000 into developing that artist and then, you know, put him on our platform and put him in all the right places and see how he does. Because then you're still – they can push you. They can play you on the radio. If you don't pop or you don't – you know what I mean? Like there's plenty of songs that have been on the radio and people make careers, but they don't like pop. You know what I mean? They don't like – you know what I mean? They're not – they have all the backing and all this stuff and they just don't have a vibe that people can like truly latch onto. And that's where, like, if you're going to try to do this anyway, do it with your own vibe. Do it with your own thing. Do it the way that you want to do it. Because in the end, what's it all for anyway?
It's for you.
It's for you, right? That's what I mean.
And there's a quote that I love. In order to create a masterpiece, you have to be willing to create a little junk along the way.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to take that first step and just start creating. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, whether it's art, music, photography, you have to be willing to put it out there. So I think people don't underestimate the value of criticism. Mm-hmm. An example, you put together a photo asset and you post a lot of people, some would, some wouldn't, but you take the opportunity and you post this photo essay online and it gets horrible reviews. Mm-hmm. People look at that in a negative manner, mm-hmm. when they shouldn't be looking at it in a negative manner. You should be learning from the critique. Now, some of it will be shit, mm-hmm. but I guarantee you there's going to be some in there that's going to be a valuable lesson. Mm-hmm. And you can take that experience and then you can just keep adding it to your creative process.
Yeah.
And you have to be willing to take that chance and you have to be willing to, you have to listen to the critics.
Yeah.
If we don't listen to our own failures and critics, we're never going to improve.
Yeah.
We're going to improve in our brain.
Only in our own brain.
I cannot tell you how much stuff I posted online in the past that has just been complete garbage. Mm-hmm. Blogs that I look back and I go, oh my God, I should really pull this from my website. It's really horribly written. Mm-hmm. But then I take a step back and I go, you know what? I recognize that.
Yeah.
I can see that there's a reason why no one subscribed to my blog. And there's a reason I'm not a strong writer. That's not my thing. What can I learn from this? I'm not going to pull it. I'm going to keep it up and I'm going to keep working on it and try to improve.
Yeah.
And if we don't have that structure in our life, if we don't try different things, we're going to be stuck doing the same thing, playing the same bars.
Yeah.
Going through the same motions, mm-hmm. working at the same bar, doing whatever it is that you may do, you're stuck in that cycle,
yeah,
and you're never going to get out. So you have to be willing to create a lot of junk along the way.
Yeah. Well, I think too that like there's a thing in our psyche. Like most people that I know, they know what's wrong with their thing. Like we all kind of know, but then we get upset when somebody else points it out. You know what I mean? We get upset. They know what we know. You know, like, oh, I know this part was a little like that or whatever. And then you always have this thing in the back, like, yeah, I know I can fix it, but I did, you know what I mean? I know I could have fixed it, but I didn't. But don't, you know, it's like, you don't want people to know what you know. Cause like you're your own worst critic always,
always,
you know? So, it's, I feel like that's why people, if anybody's going to be afraid of criticism, it's because they already know where their strong points are and where the weak points are. And they just don't like to be told, you know what I mean? From somebody else, I feel like, I know.
You ever heard the term ant?
Ant?
Ant. It stands for automatic negative thoughts. It was crafted by a doctor, and you'll never forget this doctor's name. I believe he's out of West Virginia. His name's Dr. Amen.
Dr. Amen.
Dr. Amen. And he studies the brain. And everything related to the brain, the way we form habits, the way we pick up addictions. And one of the things he discussed, and I believe the book's called Super Brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll post it in the show notes. If I'm not, that may be the right name, but I'll post it in the show notes. But it's called ANT, automatic negative thoughts. And we are bombarded by these ants every day. Mm-hmm. We all have them. We get them. They pop into your head and you're like, well, man, I don't know if the bar is going to keep me there. I just make too much money. They could hire another band for $125. And we create these own thoughts in our head.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, we don't know if that's what the bar's thinking or not.
Yeah.
But we create all this stuff that is just a huge mental blockage on our daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
And once I heard the terminology ant, I sat back and I was like, oh shit. It was like a game of ping pong. They were popping up in my head all throughout the day, but I actually was recognizing them.
Mm-hmm.
And his theory is that when they pop up in your head, step on them.
Yeah.
And step on them and just move away from it. And it has been extremely helpful in my growth process with my business, with my family, with my podcast, working two jobs.
Yeah.
I see these ants pop up and I just step on them and I'm like, okay, I can't have that. Because if I have that, I'm not going to accomplish what I need to accomplish today.
Yeah. Because it's only real to you anyway. It only exists inside your own head anyway.
Yeah. So,
I mean, really.
No one wants to talk about what's inside your head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because that gets into the psyche too
vulnerable,
much.
It's vulnerable. And then, like, you know, you start talking about all these, like, because, I mean, from day to day, I mean, if it's 11 o'clock in the morning, you're just having your coffee. You're going to be sitting there talking about, you know, some far out, like, you know, meta analysis of your own, you know, behavior and thoughts and stuff like that. I love that stuff.
I do too.
I mean, you know,
it really, when you think about it, it helps you go, now I can make the connection.
Yeah.
Why I've done this for 25 years.
Yeah. Well, everything that happens outside of your body, everything that like you do, like kind of, it starts from within.
Yeah.
All your energy kind of comes out of you. You know what I mean? And then we're bouncing around. Of course, you get affected by other people's stuff. I mean, like, it's just this big, giant, you know, ball of energy bouncing around. So, but to have good mental health is high on my priority list.
I want to get into that, but I kind of want to step back.
Yeah, please. I was going to say.
I definitely want to get into that mental health question because I think that could be really beneficial to the listeners. But before we go there, what have you learned
from doing both? I was going
to
go back to
that. Because what I like about what you're doing is that you're able to see both sides of the field.
Mm-hmm.
Where a lot of people shut down. In example, when I work bartended on the beach, I cannot tell you how many bartenders I worked with and how many bands I saw come through and go, what's fucking DJ Push Play going to play right
yeah.
now? What's he going to put on right now?
Yep.
And that was the mentality.
Yeah.
I'm sure I probably said it a couple times myself.
Yeah.
Until I really started digging deep into the music industry, and I could go, all right, instead of calling this guy Push Play, what can I learn from Push Play? And what yes. have I learned from Push Play is that DJs do a phenomenal job of marketing
mm-hmm.
and advertising and selling their product and their service.
Yeah.
Their marketing is bar none compared to local musicians.
Yeah.
They stay on top of all social media.
Which is ironic, I feel, because, I mean, typically a band has, what, 4 or 5 guys? You know, 3 guys even. And you guys can't manage a Twitter account? You know what, you know what I mean? Like, I can't tell you how many bands, you know, that don't even have an Instagram. Like, dude, you don't have a, what are you doing? There's 3 of you. There's 4 of you. You guys don't have a, you know, how do you get gigs? It's
all right, here's the hack for that. And I came up with this a couple years ago. You have 4 members in the band. Take 2-week shifts.
Yeah.
Starting the first 2 weeks, your bass player is in charge of all the social media for 2 straight weeks. Following 2 weeks, your drummer gets it. This prevents anyone from getting burned out.
Mm-hmm.
This enables your fan base to hear 4 different perspectives.
Yeah.
And it keeps the content fresh, and it keeps the person in charge for those 2 weeks. They only have a 2-week shift. They're yeah. not going to get another cycle till another 8 weeks. So for 2 weeks, that's all they have to do.
Well, and it also kind of reveals to each member of the band how important it is, how important the actual job is, and how just imperative to the whole operation it's 2018. I mean, social media was important like 15 years ago, 10 years ago. It was
now
important.
It's really important.
Now it's like, it's absolutely important. So, I mean, like, dude, if you're getting an Instagram now, you're already behind. You're already behind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm behind. I've got like
I am as well.
800 or 900 Instagram followers. I got like 1600 on Facebook. So, I mean, I'm not that, you know, huge on social media. You know what I mean? Like,
this is how important social media is. Our musician from Orlando won a huge contest. He was named the best singer-songwriter in JBL's Eon One Take Challenge. The beginning round was voted by celebrity guests such as Quincy Jones. He went on and was named the best singer-songwriter in the nation.
Is that the guy that you sent me?
No, it's a different guy.
A different guy, okay.
Different guy. I'll send you the video. Great video. Yeah. Guy works his ass off. His name's Johnny Morgan, and mm-hmm. he works his ass off in everything he does.
Yeah.
He wanted to become a brand ambassador. The first thing they said, we would love to have you as a brand ambassador for our company.
For JBL.
We need to check your social media. We need to check your feeds out. We need to see what your following's like. We need to see how many likes you have. And when you get into that corporation level as becoming a brand ambassador for any company, that is what's crucial, is how many people are looking at you on Instagram. How many likes and views does your YouTube video have? If it's not up to par,
mm-hmm.
then you're not doing the company any service.
Good. You're not.
No matter how good of an artist you
yeah.
are. Sorry, I did not mean to cut
well,
you.
Well, no, and that's kind of the exact point I was going to make, is like, you can be the best freaking guy ever on any, whatever you're doing, with music or not, you know, but if you're not an asset to anybody, and you can't sell, I mean, like, essentially, it's America. We're selling something. We're all just selling something. You know what I mean? If you're, and now it's even
how
more
you sell it is key.
It's exactly. And you could sell, and people, okay, my girl does Twitch video game streaming.
Okay.
Are you familiar? So like it blows my mind. You know what I mean? Because like, I'm not a gamer. I'm not in the gamer world. She's super into that stuff. But bottom line is, like, there's people out there playing video games, having a stream, being interactive, and they'll have like 500 followers. They'll have 500 people watching actively, typing comments and watching them play video games. Watch, there's a camera on them, and there's the feed of the game, and they're commenting, and like people can like donate, and like they can send like little emotes and things like that. It's very interactive. It's super cool. It's amazing. But the bottom line is, if you can generate traffic, you can monetize the traffic. You know what I mean? If you can generate,
and no matter what it is,
no, it doesn't matter what. Yeah. Americans will buy, and like. What I'm seeing is like these people are playing video games and they're making money, but they're not producing anything. And then I start thinking like, well, yeah, like Americans, I mean, we haven't been producing anything. You know what I mean? We don't actually make anything here. I mean, we do that. I'm kind of overgeneralizing, but it's about the marketing itself. We're selling the advertising. You know what I mean? The advertising doesn't sell the product. The advertising is the product. You know, the advertising is the product. And so, like, really all everyone's trying to do, you know, all these Instagram models, DJs, you know, podcasts, and all we're trying to do in this realm anyway, this whole social media selling your creative stuff, is generate a crowd, a demographic.
A fan base, a demographic, a following.
Just traffic. All it is traffic. You know, and that's if you can, because if you can have that, well, then you've got a fan base to sell whatever it is you're selling to.
I went and did a paddleboard race a couple months ago in Orlando,
mm-hmm.
and it every Tuesday night they do a practice race. It's not an official race, just a practice race. Probably 8-10 people out there.
Mm-hmm.
We get out and I meet the host of it. And she tells me all about the race series, how they do it every Tuesday night to get practice to move up. And she keeps records and tracks of everything and just phenomenal people. Mm-hmm. Anytime you get into sports like that, any type of sports where you're competing, the people are, even though they're competing, they're all about growth.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just great people to hang out with and meet. And so I'm talking to her afterwards and we're going over the next race and just talking about everything. And she breaks into the race series and her sponsors. And she was a brand ambassador for a big paddleboard company, sunglasses, everything you could possibly think of. And I'm just sitting there going, gosh, she must really have a strong fan base. And when I got home, her fan base is huge.
Yeah.
And there's an opportunity no matter what you do. But she did it organically. And when I say organically, I think we misthrow this term out. She did it because she enjoys doing what she
does. That's the organic aspect of it.
And people can tell.
Yeah.
Same thing when I sit down and talk to the guests that I bring in here, they love what they do. They love music. They love the business. Mm-hmm. They're willing to sit down and talk to me for however long.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You know, you jumped. I sent you a message and you're like, absolutely. I'll come over and talk about the business. 'Cause you know, there's an opportunity to learn.
Absolutely.
Oh
yeah. Well, not to derail, but what you were talking about, the question that we've had
yes.
Is what do I,
and I do derail a lot.
Me
I
too. That's kind of the whole idea of the podcast, though. But what I've learned, it all kind of goes together. But what I've learned from you know, playing in a band, playing solo, DJing, is like the connection to the audience, the connection to the demographic. Like, there's an expectation. When they look at you, first of all, like I got a big beard, big white guy, red beard. You know what I mean? Like already, like people kind of make a
preconceived notion.
So already, so like when I start playing like jam rock or like this reggae stuff or like, you know, Return of the Mac or Pony by Genuine, it doesn't fit their what they had originally thought. And I've heard so many times like, never thought that voice would come out of that face. You know, and I'm like, well, thank you. I think.
I don't know what that means, but thank you.
Sure, thanks a lot. But whatever. You know, I mean, people just, you know, but whenever I DJ, like, it's funny because you have just every tool in the world to try to reach your crowd. Meaning, you have every song in the world. So you like you look around, you think, okay, how old is that person? You know, what came out in like that? You know, what was that when they were, you know, 21? And let me play that. And then, you know, what I've really learned is like essentially I may be overgeneralizing, but girls like hooks, girls like words, and so do guys, but the beat is almost kind of like irrelevant. The hook is the song, because you can take, it's all in the context of where you put that hook. You can take, you know, I mean, like EDM or any kind of like whatever DJ music, I hate using the term EDM or whatever, but you can take any song and make it a Moombaton song. You can make it a future house song. You can make it a trap song. You can, you know what I mean? You can make it a booty song, twerk, you know what I mean? It's all depending on how fast or how slow, you know what I mean? What BPMs are, you know, you can put anything into the context and you can make anybody, you can make the party go whatever way you want. Like I like twerk music, trap, more like kind of intense stuff that if
are you getting to play that out?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So I get to do it, but I can't just go out and play my playlist, because my playlist is like, I like really dirty, you know, just nasty trap, very intense stuff. But in order to make that acceptable, I got to find the right remixes of songs that fit, that are popular enough that are going to get a reaction, that are going to, you know, oh, girls know this regardless.
How much research goes into that process?
Oh, Christ. I mean, it's not like a ton. It's more like you just kind of make it part of your daily thing. It's like, I'm always searching for the next remix.
Okay.
I'm always listening to SoundCloud. I'm always like following dudes. And once I find somebody that's got, oh, I found this great DJ. They got, you know, 12, 15, 20 remixes of great popular songs, and they're done in a way that I really like them, and they're you know, they got some.
Are you getting the majority of your, are you finding the majority of your mixes off SoundCloud?
Between SoundCloud and YouTube, a lot of times I'll play like a YouTube, YouTube's great because then you can, and I have no problem buying the music. A lot of, you know, like that's the big thing that like I didn't realize when I started DJing. Is like, yeah, you got to buy that shit. You know, like you got to buy it. Like if you want the high quality, you got to buy it. So I subscribe to a couple DJ pools. And for any DJs out there or aspiring DJs, that is more than anything in the world. The most important thing that you can do is subscribe to a DJ pool. DJ City, my MP3 pool, clubkillers.com, like any one of those, like they're like $20 a month and you can download as many songs as you want, but they have, they'll have like intros, they'll have acapellas, they've got, scratch ammo, what do they call it? Like scratch ammo, with like just samples. I mean, just everything about it is phenomenal. And like, that's what you need is your library.
Do you think your ability to be so observant and realize who's recognizing the hooks, who's recognizing the beats, do you feel that ability has come from playing so many live acoustic and band gigs?
Yeah.
Because I know I myself have seen you play a lot of times at Shepherd's. Mm-hmm. I booked you a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And I know that when you're up on stage like that at Shepherd's on a big stage, that you see, I mean, you up there, you're going through the motions. You've done it a million times. You know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So I know you're very observant on the crowd. Do you feel that that's helped you?
Absolutely. Immensely. It's there's nothing worse than like thinking that you're going to crush it out of the park and nobody gives a shit, or nobody likes the song, or it's just like, you know, or your drummer's like just not quite nailing the beat the way that you kind of thought it was supposed to be presented. That's the thing with the band, is that there's so many variables.
Lots of variables.
You know what I mean?
It goes from the band members to the club to the ambiance
to the crowd
to the weather.
The snare drum might be just a turnoff for some people. You know what I mean? The snare drum is different in every other song. You know what I mean? Like, you're playing a disco song, and this thing sounds like, you know, like the snare, like 311 snare. It's like too pingy and ringy. It sounds like you can only do reggae on it. And it's like, there's just so many variables that, like, yeah, it's not quite right. Or the guitar tone, like, you know, I mean, when I play in a band, I use pretty much like three different patches. I have a clean patch, like a crunchy patch, a lead patch, and like a super lead patch. So four. So some, you know, so if I can't, you know, people have their preconceived, like how I hear music, how you probably hear music, like you really appreciate it. You listen to it. You play a little bit too, right?
I don't play.
No?
No. No. That's
decoration.
That right there, folks, is for show. You can't see it. But, all right. No, well, you know, I played around with it a little bit. It just wasn't for me.
Okay.
It really was. I've been to a million different shows.
Yeah.
I love the music industry. I was never connected with the instruments, really.
Well, I think the way that a musician looks at the music is different than a non-musician. And like, the music to us, it's like we're behind the curtain. You know, like, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. We kind of know all the nuts and bolts of it. And like, that's why I feel like a lot of band guys kind of scoff at the DJ because it's like, oh, here's this rap song with like a simple 808, or here's another pop song with four chords. And it's like, yeah, I this isn't Chick Corea. This isn't, you know what I mean? These Aldi Meola. Like, these guys are monster players. It's called music for musicians. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like, you know, like, coffee ain't doing it for you. You want espresso. You know what I mean? But everyone else is drinking coffee. You know what I mean? Everyone else is just drinking coffee. That's fine. They like it the way they like. Some people like it with cream and sugar. Some people like it black, you know? Like, no, man, I need that hard, uncut, you know what I mean? Like, straight from the...
It's an excellent way of putting it.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's, you know, because they have the palate to digest and they can understand or appreciate, even if you're a musician and you don't really know what these other guys, these super players are doing, there's an adoration for the musician because of how well they're playing that stuff. But I used to do that. I used to kind of be a little jaded, like towards people, you try really hard because of all the work you had to put into it. God damn, you know? I spent hours learning this freaking song and I come out and play it in this crowd. And that's another thing too, is like, this crowd isn't every crowd. You got to remember, it's like, it's just this crowd, you know? And sometimes, and I used to blame the crowd, and like, you cannot do that. You cannot ever blame the crowd, no matter how shitty, like, yes. Crowd sucks sometimes.
And maybe this is a perfect intro to take it back to the mental game that we were going to follow up on it. And I've learned this in my business and my personal life and still bartending.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take things personal.
No.
You really can't. And part of you, I get where it comes from. Because
mm-hmm.
I did it for so many years. I would beat myself up and I would take things personal. Like, you know, I don't know why
so-and-so. What could have I done different?
Yeah, I don't know why so-and-so is doing this. But you have to have the ability to look through it or look past it and realize that it's not a personal attack on you.
No.
It really isn't. Like, the Facebook discussion we were talking prior to this podcast,
yeah.
I posted something about on Facebook, on my social media feed, about sticking with a set list. How often do you switch it up? And a lot of musicians, I even had a couple musicians call me up and talk to me about this.
Really?
Saying, I had a guy from Orlando saying, hey, if someone wants to hear Brown Eyed Girl, you have to play it for them.
Not true.
It's not, it's...
Someone pays you $20 to play Brown Eyed Girl, by all means, get your money, play
yes,
the song.
No,
we're not, you know what I mean? It's not that big of a deal. We're talking about on a global scale here. Like, how much effort are you putting?
Yeah.
How much effort are you putting out into your product?
But you can't take that song request personal.
No.
You can't even...
Easier said than done sometimes.
Whether you play it or you play it, but don't take it personal.
No.
Realize it's part of the game, and and I know I may catch a lot of criticism for this because I'm not a musician.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to play that song. But what good is it going to do for you personally, if you're harping on something like that.
Yeah.
It's not. It's not going to do you. It's not. It's not a healthy move.
I mean, you're a small. Every person is a small representation of what your demographic is going to be out in the world. You're going to play. You never know what anybody's into in the crowd. So we do it all the time. Like, you don't know if that. Oh, this person's into, K-pop, or, you know what I mean? Like, some this off the wall, like, atypical stuff. You know, like, or like, oh, this person definitely likes classic rock. Like, you don't know. You really don't know. So back to doing things like creatively, expressively, organically, what you want to do. Like, if you can find a way that you're doing yourself, you're doing you, you have your vibe, so to speak, but you're accommodating to your crowd, and you notice like the whole thing with like Girls Like Hooks. All right. Like, yes, it's a cheesy, whatever, Maroon 5 song, you know, but I'll be goddamned if they aren't all up on the dance floor dancing, you know, and I,
which is at the end of the day, that's
what you're there to do.
That's what you're there to do.
Your job, you know, and it's, I'd rather find a way to play whatever, you know, whatever pop song is, you know, and then make it play the song. So that you can say, I played this song. Do it how you want to. Do it to where it still grooves. I mean, don't make this avant-garde, you know what I mean, remix of it. But do it the way that you want to be perceived. Like the vibe is in the music. The hook is the hook. Keep the hook. Let's change that vibe a little bit.
And put your creative touch on it.
That's where you can put your insert yourself into the music. So it's... And
is it that keeps you going?
Well, I think it's what keeps me like progressing, as far as a DJ, especially too, because you can find any acapella you want and then produce your own song underneath it. And people go, well, if you're going to produce a song, why don't you just produce your own? And like, essentially, I am producing everything. If I take the acapella away, you wouldn't know that song. It's my song. But I mean, it's just like, it's the same thing that we're doing with the podcast. It's like, I get to go to whoever you're listening to, and then whoever I bring to your podcast, it's a co whatever that, you know what I mean? You're mixing.
We're merging two groups together.
Exactly.
We really are.
Appealing to two new markets, you know, and that's the whole, what the whole idea of a remix is. It's like, let me take you don't like, Roar. By Katy Perry. Well, I'll play you a remix of that. That if you like hip hop, you're gonna love it. Like you'll be like, oh, okay, this kicks. You know, all right, I can dance to this. I can see this being played in a club or whatever. But that idea of taking something that somebody doesn't like and making them like it, you know, is that's what's so.
It's powerful.
It's powerful.
It's really powerful. There's a lot of songs I am subject to hear a lot of kids bop in this house.
Oh yeah,
with two girls, so they play some cool remixes, and I actually find myself jamming out to them every now and then. It's probably because it's whether it's in the house or in the family vehicle, I'm subjected to kids bop, and now I just kind of get used to it.
Well, and you're familiar with it.
I'm familiar with it, but you know? I do hear a lot of, there's two kids, major kids channel, one's like Radio Disney and one's Kids Bop, and they play the same music, but they're completely different songs.
Yeah.
If I have to listen to it, I'll go with my older daughter, my 7-year-old Lake, and we listen to Kids Bop.
Yeah.
With the little one, it's Radio Disney. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe I'm talking about this on the podcast. God, I'm getting old. So what is the fire inside? What has gotten you out the door? Helped you perform over 300 shows last year, helped you step outside your comfort zone and started trying something that you don't, you know, you're still learning about, don't know a whole lot about, that you're doing, performing really well at. What is it that you do that you can share with our listeners that can help them make a crossover or help them continually grow as an artist?
I can't remember where I I wish I knew the reference, but there's I went to school for psychology, and there's one of the things that I always one of the lessons excuse me, I don't know if it was B.F. Skinner or no, I think that is somebody is after him, but there's a school of thought of, like, you know, you have, like, these five levels of things that you need. And, like, the first level is, like, well, you got to stay alive. So you need, like, food. You know what I mean? Food and water, shelter, that, the basic need. And then there's there's something beyond that. There's finding I'll do it. Yes, thank you so much. There's, you know, you need to if you have a family, you need to provide for them, whatever, whatever. The ultimate goal is essentially like this self-actualization. And I've been like yearning, thank you. I've been yearning for like this this moment where I feel that everything that I've done is a culmination of all my effort. You know what I mean? Where I'm at is a culmination of all my efforts. And there's still things that I want to do. Like I want to have more than money or even fame or anything. Like I want to just like, I want people to just know who I am. I guess it's part of that fear of, like, you know, being forgotten when you're gone type thing. I don't know, but it's not a fear. It's more of a, I know that, like, in 100 years, you know what I mean? No one's going to know, like, you know, how well do you know your great, 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 great grandfather? You know what I mean? Do you even know his name? It's not that. It's, you know, life keeps going on. I search for this moment, not this one single moment, but a way of living that's just like exactly in line with who I am and my energy and the universe and all that stuff. I'm getting a little cosmic right now, but you know, my family is a huge part of why I do what I do. I've got a 4-year-old. He's everything, you know, yes. He's everything to me, you know what I mean? So, just being there for my wife and my kid and providing for them is a huge reason why, you know, cause I mean, like, yeah, like bottom line, like, yes, I'm a total hippie about, you know, like the universe, but I mean, like, yeah. Still got to make money. Still got to pay the
rent. Yeah, still got to pay the bills.
So that's a huge reason why I get my ass up out of bed and then try to.
That's great. That's a phenomenal reason why people can't get over mental blockage like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It must have been 3 or 4 years ago. I came across a good friend. I caught up with him, and he had mentioned two things. He said, "No matter what you want to accomplish in this world, no matter what you're trying to do," and he knew I was really gung ho about my music business and passionate about it. I want to do it. I want to be part of this. This is what I love to do. And he said two things, passion and purpose.
Yeah.
You know, find out what you're passionate about and have some type of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have that purpose every day when you wake up,
mm-hmm.
then you know that purpose is going to carry you throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you heard my prelude episode 14, but one of the things I talked about was my journey with gratitude journaling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Been an amazing experience. At the end of the day, I write three things down I'm thankful for. Mm-hmm. It does a simple thing. It gets you going the next day, and you're not looking for any type of negative mm-hmm. throughout the day. Because you don't want to remember the negative. You only want to remember the positive. And mm-hmm. it's simple little hacks like that that you can do to keep going. I see so much talent. And I'm like, hey, man, just wanted to catch up. How's that project going? I haven't really got around to it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm guilty, man. Guilty.
So, sure. Oh, I am too. I am too. But I want to see these guys finish these projects.
Yeah.
Because I know how much talent they have.
Yeah.
And I know how much those projects can help them further their career.
Yeah.
And I know from a creative perspective what it can do when you accomplish one of your goals. Just a simple goal that you have on your to-do list. When you accomplish that, it it triggers everything.
You're feeding for the next one.
Yes, it triggers.
You want to chase that feeling.
Triggers everything.
And then if you chase that and you keep following that, you look back and you go, holy shit, look at all this shit that I've done. Look at everything I've done.
Last episode with David Brymer, the guy put out an all jazz CD. Doesn't even play jazz full time. 2 EPs and a single. Wrote a screenplay that got nominated in the top 10 on 13 Horror. Wrote a novel and got married all in the same year.
Jesus.
And I was talking to him like, man, how did you do this? And he goes, like, at the same time, everyone else has it.
Yeah. Everyone wants to say they don't have time to do stuff. You do.
He's like, and it does make sense. And we get sidetracked. We get sidetracked by social media. Hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
It consumes our minds and consumes our lives. And as you know, and I'm not talking, I don't want to take away with what we began with. Beginning of this podcast. Yeah. Because it is crucial.
It is.
And it is important. But with anything else in life, you have to find a way to balance it. And I don't want to sound like a hypocrite because, like we talked earlier, it is really important.
Yeah.
2018, you got to have it.
Yeah.
But you got to know how to manage it, and you got to know how to balance it, and you cannot let it consume your life.
Well, there's production in this consumption. You know, so like you can sit there and scroll. You know what I mean? And like you do, and I do it a lot. And like, I do learn a lot too, but there's a lot of, you know, I follow too many meme pages too, honestly, just for some laughs. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's funny. You know, but I mean, it connects you with other artists and you see what they're doing and it's hugely helpful. But, you know, just put it down for every now and then. Just put it down.
Take a break from it.
Well, and then like have a rule for like, all right, for every, even if you just post a picture on Instagram, man, like that, for every whatever hour you spend on Instagram, make sure you post something.
My biggest life hack, and I'm really working hard on doing this, is when I wake up, I try not to touch my phone for the first hour.
That's good.
I am so – now my computer, that's a whole nother beast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really trying hard not to do that, but I'm trying to make it a rule where the hour before when I wake up and before I go to bed, I'm not consuming that.
Yeah.
Because there's an old Zen saying, control the mind and you can control anything.
Yeah.
And it really is true. Before we're going to start wrapping up this podcast, I wanted to share something cool with you that I found. The world's first DJ dance party was thrown by Jimmy Savile in 1943.
Yep.
I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
He was spinning jazz records. He also became the first to use turntables to keep music in continuous play. Yep. The 43.
Yeah.
Just... seems, I mean, I was born in 77, but 40, to think back then, I love music history. And the first ever disc jockey took his place in 1909. A fellow by the name of Roy Newby of California. He was 16 at the time, and he played records for a small transmitter.
Mm-hmm.
We've grown light years from now... having a handheld computer in our pocket that can get us any type of music that we want to get our hands on.
Yep.
So before we wrap this up, what is in store for Cuddy Jones in 2018? And also, where can everyone, what's the best place for people to connect with you?
I've been on Instagram.
Lately. Okay.
It's kind of my favorite thing. Just because I like the layout of it. I need to get my Twitter up. But
likewise.
The Twitter verse is it's not my favorite thing, you know. Instagram, Cuddy Jones, everything's Cuddy Jones. If you Google, like, pretty much all my stuff comes up.
And what's your YouTube channel, Cuddy Jones?
Cuddy Jones.
Okay, yep. Get on his YouTube channel. Check out his acoustic. He's got some great videos on there, and I believe you do have one DJ video posted, right?
No, nothing yet. Nothing.
Okay. So there was someone took a video of you playing.
Yes, probably.
Okay.
On my Facebook feed too. There's probably.
Gotcha. Okay. I did come across some. Okay. I did come across that. What's in store for 2018?
Well, I think what I'm going to do is focus a lot of my efforts on making remixes and marketing myself. I want to do, more videos, more acoustic kind of stripped down videos. And then I also want to do, pretty much just creating media, and focusing less on how original it is, or, you know, I mean, like, you definitely, everything that you're going to do is going to be you doing it. So I don't really like, oh, make it super original and new and fresh, but more about like, just get it out there. You know, get it out there. Like we said before, you gotta create some junk if you want
to
make a masterpiece.
Yeah, you really do. In order to create a masterpiece, you gotta be willing to create a little junk along the way.
So definitely just investing in my brand and doing more stuff like this to reach new markets and talk to new people and just try to just stay happy and stay healthy. And
that's awesome. You know, and enjoy that beautiful family.
That's right.
Exactly. That is awesome. Well, I greatly appreciate your time. I love talking about the business with you, man. And I will have all of Cuddy's information in the show notes. I'll add the YouTube link, the Instagram channel, and that way you guys can get out there and check it out. I'm John Samuelwood. Hold that thought. Signing off.
Awesome, man. Great.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to episode 15 with Cuddy Jones. If you like what you hear, do us a huge favor. Head over to the iTunes store, subscribe to the podcast, Hold That Thought, or subscribe via Podomatic, and follow us on Twitter at HoldThat77. I'm John Samuel, and I'm signing off.